The following podcast is edited from the live Voices of Montana program, Montana's original statewide radio talk show that's heard Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. The show has been airing for more than 20 years, and it wouldn't be possible without our local radio affiliates. Contact your local radio station if you'd like to hear the program live in your area, and it's currently not available. The show is also streamed live on voicesofmontana.com. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program, inviting you to contact us with comments or show ideas. The email address is studio@voicesofmontana.com. It happened, the confirmation of ACB, Amy Cooney Barrett. People said an awful lot about it, but in the end, I think everyone was just doing their job, and I think the United States just put a very, very fine jurist on the bench of its highest court. Also going to unpack a little more on the influence peddling story, yes, we can call it that, that broke last week with Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, China. Despite the mainstream mislead's best efforts, it's too big a story to cover under the rug. But first, it's Superintendent of Public Instruction, Elsie Arntzen. Yes, 1 week left before Election Day. That's up today here on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio. From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, made of meat and potatoes, it's Tom Schultz.
Dang right, Josh. Welcome.
You know, it's National Potato Day today.
It's National Potato Day?
Oh, you better have meat and potatoes tonight with a side of potatoes and a side of potatoes.
Always have meat and potatoes. That's that silly American diet. Hey, hope you guys are all doing well. Thank you for being here. Yes, it is two decades strong, working on three, from Montana, for Montana. Voices of Montana. Josh just made me hungry. But we'll keep focused here because today there are some things I want to focus on. If we can get to some of the sound bites, I'll play them. I think Amy Cooney Barrett had a nice speech last night when she talked about, look at people are just doing their jobs. She does, and I will do mine when it comes to being on the bench and how she defined that. I think you'll appreciate we can get to that. Also, as I've been mentioning, I've been trying to get that press conference that Tony Bobulinski had gave out last, it was Thursday, and then we just run into different things that didn't allow us to do that, but today I'm going to try to get that because I think it's important. Also, he is going to be on Tucker Carlson tonight, so we'll kind of set the stage for that a bit later on. But first, it's time to welcome Superintendent of Public Instruction, Elsie Arntzen, to Voices of Montana. Good morning, Elsie. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. Good morning. What a great, beautiful day. I'm in Beaverhead County. We are unrolling stars and stripes in every classroom. So we're going to be talking to the American Legion Post there. And so excited that after our social studies standards, they hadn't been revisited for over 25 years. We dusted them off and we put original documents in every single grade. And having the Pledge of Allegiance, it is a state statute, having our children recite that. But more importantly, Tom, to know exactly what those words mean, to be that American, to be honoring our republic, our great republic, as well as knowing our Montana Constitution. So excited to be in Dillon this morning. So other side of the state, but it's a beautiful day across our state in Montana.
Yeah, Dillon's a beautiful place. It's still one of those well-kept secrets, so we're going shh, people in Dillon, I know, are going shh, shh, but it's out for sure. Elsie, I'm going to have you wear a couple of hats today. I wanted to have you, because you're a candidate for your office again, Superintendent of Public Instruction, but as that state's top education official, I want to catch up to date, and I guess you can start with what you're talking about there. I want to get an update on schools and how they're doing with the pandemic and your perspective on that. But this Stars and Stripes program, you know, if I was to ask you as a candidate, what are some of the accomplishments that you would look back on? I suppose this would be one of them.
It would be. You know, I honor my dad, Sherm Hubley, golly sakes. He was an American history teacher at Billings Senior. And he taught me about civics at the kitchen table. And I think that's what a lot of students learned from. But if we haven't tackled what it is to be an American or be a Montanan in the classroom, then we didn't do our job. And as a teacher of 23 years, I worked through that in fifth grade in our curriculum. But it's extremely important that our students understand that, you know, there is bias, that there is a challenge between what happened But it shouldn't be the teacher's bias. It should be a bias that comes from understanding what the facts and the dates all surrounding an event that happened in history. But, you know, civic standards are one of 12 teaching and learning standards that we hold at the state level. We've tackled five of them and revamped five. And I'm very proud of that. That is the lesson plan for a teacher in how they need to teach. You know, if our test scores are flatlining, and I don't agree with one test showing success, but if our test scores are flatlining, we need to do a better job in preparing our teachers and having them understand what is being taught. And having that partnership with parents is so important. And I am very proud of how the state agency has turned the corner, and we are back in serving families, serving students, not serving bureaucracy as it was before. You know, Tom, before I got in, 35 years had been run by one party. And I believe in the republic. I believe that we need to have representative government. Only six states elect my position by party, and I'm very honored to serve in my role. So, yep, it's an election around the corner, and I'm excited. We've done so much, and we have yet a lot more to do.
Want to talk about how, since we're on it, how social studies is being taught? Because when I went to school, there was a social studies class that you had to attend. It was required. And maybe you can just update me, just for curiosity's sake, how it is actually being taught today. But we got to take a break, and then we'll come on back and more to update on here as it comes to this 2020-2021 school season, how kids are doing. I know this pandemic has got people making a lot of different arrangements this year. So let's get an update. Elsie Arnston is with us, Superintendent of Public Instruction. 866-627-5483. If you want to pop in here, you're always welcome. Or text a question or a comment, 781-627-5483 for Voices of Montana. She's the daughter of Montana public school teachers, taught herself fifth and sixth grades for 23 years, fourth generation Montanan. Elsie Arnson is with us here today, a week out from this election. Welcome back to Voices of Montana. Elsie, thank you for being here. Tom Schultz alongside the, I just kind of want to go right into, it's kind of funny how teachers, you remember the names of your teachers. I remember our social studies teacher, this was back in Glendive, Montana, named Jean Beauchet. But we actually had a social studies class. And so we and various different classes too taught us our form of government and taught us a lot of different things. How are those things being taught today? Because we believe, as you had kind of indicated, there's a lot of importance on it. And we seem to be losing focus on our heritage in this country.
Well, our social studies standards in Montana incorporate history, economics, geography, and civics. And so there is a kind of like a pick and choose. And because we hadn't looked at the standards, they hadn't been emphasized either. So when it comes to that day in the classroom, those things could have been pushed to the side. And I believe if we are going to raise a very educated electorate to understand, you know, who we were, that is about conflict. And a lot of things in our society right now don't want to even mention conflict. They don't want to talk about the negative of it, or else they turn the other side and they just want to point fingers rather than really coming to solutions. And I believe that needs to occur more. And, you know, I taught fifth grade and I love that because, you know, in the morning those kids would come in and all excited and then, you know, get recess and, you know, they were so excited. They were like sponges. We need to make sure that kids are still that way, that they have the ability to sponge in all kinds of thoughts and then critically think what this means. Not have them being spoon-fed, but have them understand that there is an option, that there is an opportunity to discuss things. And what a better way than discuss American history and know who we were, know who we are, and then form a group of Montanans that are going to be knowing full well that they're going to support and build Montana and make Montana so proud. That's the role of public schools.
You talked about that office being a one party for so long, and there were 12 specific teaching standards in Montana. You have taken the opportunity to kind of dive into a number of them. You mentioned our social studies, and thank you for that explanation. What else needed to be kind of dusted off?
Oh, boy, and this is also really close to my heart. This is career technical education. I mean, think about it. You just do the simple math. 40% of our students are going to graduate high school. And in rural Montana, that's 100%. But in an average across, there's only 40% after they get their diploma go on to college. Simple math, 60% aren't. Do not you think that all that precious tax dollar that we have given to public school children when they come into school, that should be given in the opportunity for skills, to be able to do anything in a teamwork, to be able to do something in technology, to get behind any kind of a combine, anything dealing with our number one industry of agriculture, and have that opportunity. But they've been overlooked. So we did a lot of emphasis on career technical education, and we've embedded it in upper elementary and middle school. So if they have an awareness then, student engagement's going to occur. That means we're going to keep them in school longer, but they're going to have broader vision of who they are. So career technical education, I'm all in on. You know, college is a path, but it's not for everyone. And we don't want to press that for everyone. We want to make sure that every student has an opportunity to succeed. Career technical education is a path, and we're embracing it more and more every day.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That sounds real good. Elsie, give us an update. Let's see. We've got about a minute and a half in this segment here. Take it away in terms of how kids are doing, how teachers are doing, how parents and administrators are doing right now amidst this pandemic.
Well, you know, it's cold and flu season, so, you know, got to social distance, wash your hands, and, of course, with the governor's mandate, wear that mask. And there's a lot of repercussions that are happening within all of that. The isolation that had happened back in March when schools were shuttered, it's there. So there's a lack of student engagement, and I'm not being negative by any means. I'm being a realist here. If we protect our children and we want to embrace our children, we embrace that family as well. You know, we've been doing drug roundtables. We've had four of them across the state. And that pandemic, in this pandemic, is challenging to have risk behavior, even more so, not just in our student population, but within the family. I am concerned. I'm concerned about our Montana positive future that is so bright. And but embracing teachers at this point, I give them everything, because at this point, they really don't know what the next day is going to be. And our school leaders, and we can talk more about what enrollment counts look like. We just got a number that I can share.
Let's do that.
I'm more than happy to do that.
Good. Let's take a break and then catch up on that as well. We've got one more segment here with Elsie Arnston, Superintendent of Public Instruction from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Play a little bit of the highlights from yesterday's confirmation from Amy Coney Barrett. Like I say, I think the United States just put a very, very fine jurist on its highest bench. And so we'll talk about that a bit later on as we conclude here. Elsie Arnston, Superintendent of Public Instruction, supervises the K through 12 public schools and districts, also serves on the State Land Board, the State Library Commission, and ex officio member of the Board of Public Education. And as I mentioned, too, a teacher for 23 years, fifth and sixth grades. Those are really cool grades, by the way. If I remember fifth and sixth grade, I was in Hysham, Montana, which was, you know, small little town that people drive by anyway. But those are pretty, you talked about it, those are pretty impressionable grades, aren't they?
You know, they are. And that's where 4-H really was. I was a 4-H star myself. And, you know, or 4-H starts, and then you get into FFA and those other student organizations that really keep you involved. And not just in school, but keep you involved in your community. And I'm so proud to be championing, you know, all of our student organizations. So I wanted to talk to you. You know, I was a legislator for 12 years,
right,
and was so honored to be part of that representative government. And I went door to door, and especially at this time, people have so many questions. And I didn't have all the answers, but at least I sought them. But people want to listen, and they want, you know, they want you to listen as well in government. And I think that is what I've also brought to the table, is trying to figure out what is going on with the system of education. So right now, we take account at the state level of enrollment. In other words, it's not attendance, but it's 10 days prior to this count if you have been notified by your family or guardian that you are going to be part of the school system, public education. And then we take another one that is in February, and we average those. That then goes into a prediction model that will fund our schools for the next 2 years in the biennium. And we submit these numbers at the end of the month to the governor, and he then goes ahead and puts them into his budget. And that is what K-12 education will be funded for. And I want to talk about being a conservative, because I was a conservative, still am 100%. That dollar is a very precious tax dollar. It does give an opportunity for public school children to succeed. But I understand that that precious tax dollar is at risk right now, because the model of education is different. I've got some schools that are completely shuttered across our state, and teachers are remotely working. Parents aren't back in the workforce because they are that teacher at the kitchen table. But I have a blended model where there's 2 days in and 2 days out. And then I have a model where they are 100% back into school. It's a traditional model, and it's safe with social distancing, of course, and making sure that students and staff are protected from this unseen enemy, the virus. But the numbers that came in most recently, and they are still tentative because we haven't gotten everyone in yet. I've got about 8 districts of 400 districts that haven't supplied information yet. And we're about 3,000 students out. In other words, 3,000 students that we believe should be in public school aren't. Now, counties are the ones that report homeschool. And homeschool in Montana means that's private. So we're going to get those numbers from our 56 counties. We don't have them yet. But right now, we believe that there are remedies in state law. And as a legislator, they're there. We call this unanticipated enrollment, and it could be a decline or it could be an increase in enrollment. And we've got a trend model that goes back way back to 96. And there are ways that districts have of balancing their budget. So 3,000 students out of 149,000 students doesn't seem like a lot. But if you're in rural Montana and you have only 10 children in your classroom or in your entire school, and you miss one student or two students, you know, that's quite a way to realize what is happening in education. But, you know, I'm a local control gal, always have been. So we are supporting our school districts. In fact, we've got a Zoom meeting that's going to be occurring in just a few minutes in Helena with our 400 school leaders, as well as all of our education advocates. And we're sharing with them what these remedies can be. So no panic, no worry. You know, these children haven't evaporated. But this is local control. And the virus, we do believe, had a great effect with that.
All right.
But we're here to help serve, and I just wanted to share with that, Tom.
Elsie, thank you for that. We've got a couple of text messages and a phone call that have come in. And how much time do you have? I know we were going to go to about 9:28. I got to catch some headlines here. Do you have another 5 minutes or so?
I'd be more than happy to share. You bet.
Okay, so stand by. We'll get to Pat in Helena, then a couple of text messages, one regarding how much, you know, why does tax money go to private institutions? And also here, there's a text message regarding children required to learn more than their native language in many European countries. So we're talking education. Elsie Arnson is with us, Superintendent of Public Instruction. Back with more in a bit after these headlines from Brian Bennett.
The Montana Army National Guard has been deployed to the Montana State Prison as coronavirus cases inside the facility have festered over the last 2 weeks. 66 volunteer soldiers will begin today to assist with distribution of mail, laundry, inmate counts, and delivering meals. Nearly 20,000 unemployment insurance payments totaling just under $8 million were issued for the week of October 19th through the 23rd. The Department of Labor and Industry continues to encourage anyone who believes they may be eligible to file a claim. According to responses to a recent Montana State University pre-election poll, regardless of party affiliation, Montanans increasingly report uncertainty that they will take a potential COVID-19 vaccine. Generally, the poll revealed respondents reported low to moderate levels of worry about the impact of the pandemic on their health, but that increases with age. With Montana News headlines, I'm Brian Bennett.
All right, just a few more minutes here. Appreciate your extra time. Elsie Arnson, Superintendent of Public Instruction. Let's get right to these text messages at 781-627-5483. First one up, Elsie, is why should any public tax money be given to private schools?
Well, you know, there really isn't any path for that. And we fund public education through our tax dollars. And, in fact, the federal government has required that not only do we gather that dollar and distribute it, but now we report it very transparently. So we report local tax dollar as well as state tax dollar and federal per school. So any school, and we've got that on our website, and this is one of the things that I firmly believe in. We need to know where our tax dollars are going towards.
So no tax money then through the Department of Education is going to private institutions?
What I understand, the way that we fund schools in Montana, there is not a path for that. There was a federal case, the Espinoza case,
yeah,
that allowed a tax credit that was determined. And then there were federal care relief dollars that came from COVID relief that followed through to public school. And then it went out through a formula to a non-public. This was not Montana state tax dollars.
Right.
This was congressional dollars that were written in. We followed the law, and it's been implemented and has been implemented in this pathway for multiple superintendents before me either. And it's not dollars. The way that the CARES dollars came in for COVID relief was that the dollars belonged at the public school setting, and then there's a relationship with the non-public homeschool coalition, a Christian school, or any kind of non-public school. That relationship then was devised, and dollars were never given, but possibly there were laptops or there might have been hotspots, so that learning could still continue, but the ownership still relied on the public schools,
okay,
which means that the ownership still relied with the taxpayer.
Let's cover this one. What's being done in Montana to encourage students to take foreign language courses?
Oh, that is exciting. You know, these are one of the standards that we're going to be unrolling in January. So and I think there hasn't been a lot of emphasis on that. You know, you think we talk so much about globalism and everything, especially in agriculture, because we're a producing state, that we would have more influence, especially in language, when we take our world-class products to market. But this is one of the standards, those 12 teaching and learning standards, that we're going to be unrolling in January. And that means the emphasis is going to be there even more. Let's talk about our indigenous languages. I know as a legislator, I supported that, making sure that that cultural heritage is vibrant and rich because, again, like I said, we got to know who we were and who we are so that we can have a great path forward.
Are there any schools in Montana that teach the 16-19 curriculum? Steve from Great Falls. Thanks, Steve.
You know, I appreciate that. To my knowledge, no. But here again, this is a social studies discussion. And, you know, when it comes to teaching our rich history, not just in Montana and being a frontier state, but this is about teaching conflict, like I had mentioned before. And it's very cloudy and very shady with this project, the 1619 project.
Right.
But in Montana, to my knowledge, I do not have any schools teaching it at this point. But let's just talk about these standards. These are the ground. I build the ground. The curriculum is purchased and it's reviewed at that local level. That curriculum is what administers my standards. And so when we unroll these state standards and social studies standards that we're doing right now, it's very important that schools know then what they are, how they are going to implement what we have put into play at the state level. That 1619 project is not something that is that resonates with Montanans and is not part of our Montana values.
Pat, I'm not going to have time for your call. Pat's listening in, Helena, and I appreciate the call. Let me. We won't even really have time for an answer here because you got to get on the road. I know we got a breakup coming at 9:35. Let me just briefly here. How is colonialism treated in schools now? Her question regards the changing of the social studies standards. How are they being taught?
Well, you know, they have 5 years. Districts have 5 years to implement these standards. I was so excited that we unrolled these standards on Patriots Day, 9/11. And what a perfect day for remembrance with this. So there is going to be a lot of discussion moving forward on every single grade that social studies will be taught. Because it used to be taught just third grade, fifth grade, eighth grade, and when you're in high school.
All right, we'll
now
find out.
Now we've got them in every single grade.
We'll find out more later. Elsie, be well. Thank you so much.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
Appreciate Elsie Arnson being on the air. She had to get to an appointment that she had on the road. She's pulled over and give us a great interview. And then text messages came in, coming in late. And sorry, Pat, I couldn't get to your call. Just was not enough time as we had things lined up. I want to talk to Steve in Great Falls just personally to say I'm going to be looking into the 16-19 curriculum. We're going to kind of get by this election year. And, well, I'm not sure. By the way, thank you so much for being here. And welcome back to Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. I cleared some time because I want to play this Tony Bobulinski presser from Thursday so you could hear it for yourself, all right? The mainstream mismedia is not really playing this whatsoever. You can find it out there on the internet. Maybe you haven't taken the time. Tony is a former Biden associate, Hunter Biden's business partner in a group called Sinohawk. And I'll talk more about that in a little bit. But first of all, back to Steve, the 16-19 curriculum. We get past election, and if as much as we can, because I'm talking to folks, we're lining some things up continuing throughout this week regarding candidates, and then we'll do some stuff on election day and Monday, the day before election. I don't know when we will know who the winners are in our state elections. I think a lot on the local level will be decided early enough. I think we can't necessarily count all the ballots. If it's a close race, we're not going to know right away. That may be the case for the Daines Bullock race. And so I'm not exactly sure. And then for as far as the presidential election goes, unless it's a complete landslide for one candidate or the other, I think you're going to see lawsuits and court action and just because of the nature of this all mail-in election for a lot of states. In Montana, they just a reminder that if you haven't mailed back your ballot, don't do it. Drop it off now. Because the post office had said past October 26th that they could not guarantee that you're going to get your ballot to the elections office to be counted in time for this important election. So if you haven't dropped it in the mail, don't. You'll have to. There are drop boxes in various places, and they're supposed to be monitored, too. So keep an eye out for that. Protect that ballot. But drop it off at your local clerk and recorder's office, the elections office. Generally, it's your local county courthouse, and you'll guarantee, hopefully, that your ballot will be counted. So, just an important reminder there. Okay, I saw this presser on Thursday and recorded it and wanted to play it for you, just because it comes from a gentleman who doesn't really have an axe to grind, and that's what he says here. He's a retired U.S. Navy lieutenant. And Sinohawk Holdings was the company that he was a CEO of, and that's the company. And he'll tell you this in this presser from Thursday that the Biden sought him out to be the CEO of, and so he has a lot of personal information that he is now sharing with the FBI. When the New York Post wrote their story regarding Hunter Biden and the connections with Joe Biden's family and a Chinese energy firm, I can talk a little bit more about what this firm is as well. It's CEFC China Energy. It has close ties to the Communist Party and the People's Liberation Army, but it's no longer a company because of allegations of bribery that surfaced, and then the former president of that company was arrested last year and hasn't been seen since. That's as much maybe as I have time for on CEFC. Did I say that right? CFEC, thank you. Anyway, so this is what Bobulinski was doing. He was working with this Chinese company who had hired Hunter Biden to be a consultant at possibly $850,000 a year. And then there was a lot of money that went into creating a holding company. And as you maybe have known, if you looked at this New York Post report, again, these messages coming from a left-behind laptop, not just one, was turned over to the FBI and then made public by Rudy Giuliani, who is a Trump associate. I mean, let's be clear about that. But despite the fact that the Biden campaign has said this is more Russia, 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 there's no proof of that. And Bob Alinsky, his testimony is corroboration of the fact that these messages are actually factual. And why does it matter? Let me tell you why it matters here, okay? Here is a cut from 2007. Now, some folks, like the Associated Press, say this is taken out of context and slightly is because it's a portion of a larger answer. But this is what Joe Biden had said when it came to getting campaign contributions, money in politics.
Lobbyists aren't bad people. Special interest groups are not bad people. But guess what? They're corrosive. People who accept money from them aren't bad people. But it's human nature. You go out, Lynn, and bundle $250,000 for me, all legal, and then you call me after I'm elected and say, Joe, I'd like to come and talk to you about something. You didn't buy me, but it's human nature. You helped me. I'm going to say, sure, Lynn, come on in. Just like, by the way, if I turn around and I'm elected President of the United States of America, and you call me and say, Joe, I want to come and see you, I'm going to see you. You helped me.
And I get that, all right? But there's too much money in politics right now. And the higher the price tag, the more compromised you can become, all right? And this is influence peddling, all right? This is China. This is not campaign contributions to a candidate. This is dealings that are underhanded. And I'm just going to play this because we'll run out of time. Here's the press conference from Tony Bob Alinsky as of last Thursday.
Good evening. My name is Tony Bob Alinsky. I served as a lieutenant in the United States Navy with high security clearance. My father and grandfather both served for decades in our country's armed forces. Since leaving the Navy, I've been involved in various successful businesses, both in this country and abroad. I'm making this statement to set the record straight about the involvement of the Biden family, Vice President Biden, his brother Jim Biden, and his son, Hunter Biden, in dealings with the Chinese. I have heard Joe Biden say that he's never discussed business with Hunter. That is false. I have firsthand knowledge about this because I directly dealt with the Biden family, including Joe Biden. I have also heard that Vice President Biden said on Tuesday that Senator Ron Johnson, the chair of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, should be ashamed for suggesting that Biden family sought to profit from their name. Well, here are the facts I know, and everything I'm saying is corroborated by emails, WhatsApp chats, agreements, documents, and other evidence. And the American people can judge for themselves. I brought, I guess, for record, three phones that spanned the years 2015 through 2018. These phones have never been held by anybody else besides myself. I was told this past Sunday by somebody who was also involved in this matter that if I went public this information, it would bury all of us, man, the Bidens included. I have no wish to bury anyone. I've never been political. The few contributions I have made have been to Democrats. But what I am is a patriot and a veteran. To protect my family name and my business reputation, I need to ensure that the true facts are out there. In late 2015, I was approached by James Gillier, whom I had known for many years, about joining him in a deal which he said would involve the Chinese state-owned enterprise, CEFC China Energy, and what he called one of the most prominent families in the United States. I was informed first by Gillier and then by Hunter Biden, and by Rob Walker, who was working with the Bidens, that the Bidens wanted to form a new entity with CFC, which was to invest in infrastructure, real estate, and technology in the U.S. and around the world. And the entity would initially be capitalized with $10 million and then grow to billions of dollars of investment capital. After months of discussion, I agree to Gilyear and Hunter Biden's request to become CEO of the entity to be called Sinohawk. Sino representing the Chinese side, Hawk representing Hunter Biden's brother Bo's favorite animal. And between February and May 2017, we exchanged numerous emails, documents, and WhatsApp messages concerning Sinohawk and its potential business. On May 2nd, 2017, the night before Joe Biden was to appear at the Milken Conference, I was introduced to Joe Biden by Jim Biden and Hunter Biden. At my approximately hour-long meeting with Joe that night, we discussed the Biden's history, the Biden's family business plans with the Chinese, with which he was plainly familiar, at least at a high level. After that meeting, I had numerous communications with Hunter, Walker, Gilyear, and Jim Biden regarding the allocation of the equity ownership of Sinohawk. On May 13, 2017, I received an email concerning allocation of equity, which says 10% held by H for the big guy. In that email, there's no question that H stands for Hunter, big guy for his father, Joe Biden, and Jim for Jim Biden. In fact, Hunter often referred to his father as the big guy or my chairman. On numerous occasions, it was made clear to me that Joe Biden's involvement was not to be mentioned in writing, but only face-to-face. In fact, I was advised by Gilyear and Walker that Hunter and Jim Biden were paranoid about keeping Joe Biden's involvement secret. I also had a disagreement with Hunter about the funds CFC was contributing to Sinohawk. Hunter wanted $5 million of those funds to go to himself and his family, so he wanted the funds wired directly to an entity affiliated with him. I objected because that was contrary to our written agreements concerning Sinohawk. He said, referring to the chairman, his father, that CFC was really investing in the Biden family, trump card, and that he was the one putting his family legacy on the line. He also said to me on May 17th, 2017, that CFC wanted to be my partner, to be partner with the Bidens. During these negotiations, I repeated to Hunter and others that Sinohawk could not be Hunter's personal piggy bank. And I demanded that proper corporate governance procedures be implemented for capital distributions. Hunter became very upset with me. CFC through July 2017 was assuring me the funds would be transferred to Sinohawk, but they were never sent to our company. Instead, I found out from Senator Johnson's September report that the $5 million was sent in August 2017 to entities affiliated with Hunter. Tomorrow, I will be meeting with the Senate committee members concerning this matter, and I will be providing to the FBI the devices which contain the evidence corroborating what I have said. So I will not be taking any questions at this time.
That's Tony Bobulinski, who also presented three phones that he claimed contained corroborating evidence. And a lot of that evidence has come out now as well. And why is that important? I talked about it a little bit because I know that we've got a lot of money in politics. And as Joe Biden had said, well, he had talked about having public financed campaigns. I don't think that's the way we need to go to fix this problem. But this is different, okay? And especially when he says this as well.
I have not taken a penny from any foreign source ever in my life. My son has not made money in terms of this thing about, what are you talking about, China.
So when he completely, categorically denies this, and there's a lot of evidence that shows that there was some kind of dealing here, some kind of transaction, I think it's very important, okay, because I asked the question, what is China buying? It's not a campaign contribution. I think it's influence peddling. And I know it happens at a lot of different levels, and people with integrity can overcome that. But the bigger the price tag, the tougher that is, okay? So I wanted to share that out there and did get that done. Look for that story to continue to grow, at least in some media sources, not all of them. Perhaps, though, the mainstream media will be able to pick that up.